Well, my goodness, how far we've come in these different meetings. How very far we've come. These meetings are always a time for me to reflect about what's happened in this movement over the last few years, and to think about how far we have come, and to think about how far we have still to go. I'd like to thank you all once again for the many good things you're doing for many families, even far beyond this problem, because as we're going to see, the legal cases that came out of this problem are reforming not only the mental health system, but also the legal system. And it is clear that many of the problems in this area and in others have been caused by lawyers. And the way in which you have organized in a highly professional, intelligent, scientific, responsible fashion has led to dramatic reforms in mental health and is now leading to reforms in the legal system. First of all, in terms of the Daubert-Kumho changes in the way that expert witnesses get to testify, we've had generations of bogus expert witness testimony. And it wasn't until the past 10 years, really, that there was an intensive, organized, and responsible effort in the legal system to exclude junk science. We have, to this day, still, in every single case that I've ever participated in, we have been able to exclude testimony that people repress memories. It's junk science. I hope that we continue to win every one of them. But these kinds of procedures are convincing judges throughout the country that junk science experts should not be permitted to testify. And this will be true in family law. This will be true in criminal law. It's going to reshape the legal system. Most of the mental health professional testimony that is offered in courts today, whether it be in civil cases, criminal, or family, will not survive a competent Daubert-Kumho hearing. The problem is getting a competent hearing in front of a judge. And this is why changes in legal education are so critical. There are so few judges and so few lawyers that understand science or that have ever done a Daubert-Kumho hearing or that have ever won one. But these things will be changing, and they'll be changing rather dramatically over the next decade. One other thing that you have done with this movement is to convince many lawyers that the Lone Ranger method of practice it should be a thing of the past. You know, back about 1900, physicians used to go from house to house in their buggies with their little leather bags, and they probably injured as many people as they helped. And that was the Lone Ranger method of practicing medicine. We don't do that anymore. People go to a hospital where there is a coordinated multidisciplinary team of radiologists and surgeons and laboratory technicians and many different kinds of professionals working together to get a result that actually helps the patient. The legal system is still mostly trapped in the Lone Ranger method of practice, where some individual lawyer believes that they can comprehend and understand and pick up thousands of research studies in memory or dissociation or MPD and try their case before a jury or a judge. They cannot do it. And we see disaster after disaster after disaster using the Lone Ranger method of practicing law. These cases, I've been very fortunate enough to participate in, as far as I can tell, 5 of the 6 largest verdicts and settlements in lawsuits against psychotherapists. In every case, we had a multidisciplinary team, an expert trial lawyer, expert legal science people, expert experts, all of whom have experience passing the Frye-Daubert-Kumho tests. Another thing is that these types of cases are getting rid of the bizarre notion that there's something called soft science. And it was very helpful that Justice Breyer, in the most recent decision, which is the Kumho-Tyer decision, took aim directly at this bizarre notion that there's some difference between the hard and the soft sciences. Sciences study things. They study reality. They study the world. It doesn't matter what it is that you study. This strange notion that there's the soft and bizarre sciences is now getting thrown out of the legal system by judges like Justice Breyer, who are highly educated in science. And I can assure you he is, because he was one of my advisors at Harvard Law School, and I had many discussions with him about the fact that there is no such thing as soft science. So these are victories. These are things that this movement and the types of lawsuits that were generated here are doing to reform the mental health system. Let's talk about some of the victories we've seen in the legal and the mental health system. I've had an opportunity to depose in the last few months some of the major leaders in the so-called MPD movement, and I make them testify about all the MPD clinics they know that have been closed by lawsuits. It's really quite enjoyable. And they go on and on and on and on. We have really closed down, as far as I can tell, every MPD clinic in the United States. And the few so-called dissociative disorders clinics that are left are dramatically different. They even put on their advertising that they hand to patients that false memories are possible. We can't tell if your memories are accurate or not. There's nothing about satanic cults being done in any hospital or clinic that I know of anywhere in the U.S. I gave a talk a few years back to about 1,500 hospital administrators and doctors, and afterwards they came up and they said, after the Hammond verdict, which was the first major financial hit that these people took, they said, we began to see all these MPD patients as $2 million invoices. So yes, these lawsuits have made a huge difference. The courage to heal may still be practiced in social work departments and by a few lone strange therapist, but I'm not aware of any hospital or major clinic in the United States that will permit that book on the premises. There are no more hypnosis groups to recover memories in any hospital or major clinic that I am aware of. Again, these practices are going to survive in small offices with strange therapists with odd ideas, but there's almost no way to stop all of that. License revocations. Pam read a letter last night that was a major and shocking victory, because we'd been told for years that it was impossible to get anyone's license revoked for bad therapy, only sex with patients or criminal activity. Well, we've gotten lots of people's licenses revoked, lots, in Minnesota and Texas and Oregon and Idaho and Chicago and Massachusetts and Georgia, and we will go on continuing to do that. And that's the pressure from the lawsuits, the media, the educational effort that you have sustained now for many, many years. It's having a huge impact. One thing that's curious, I get a lot of people in depositions now, almost everyone we sue actually, who says, I've retired. They've all moved into business consulting, or they've left the state, or they've just decided that it was too much trouble practicing psychotherapy anymore. But defendant after defendant after defendant in these cases, they retire before the case is even tried or settled. Closing the journal dissociation was a major victory, because most of the junk science that supports the so-called scientific theory of traumatic amnesia or robust repression or whatever you want to call it, most of that science is published in that journal, and that journal has been closed, which is a humiliating embarrassment. They said something in the newsletter about the fear of lawsuits causing precipitous declines in membership, and, you know, things like that. So anyway, having that journal closed is very helpful. Most of the editorial board members of that journal have had significant legal problems, and several of them have lost their license, or had their license revoked, or pled no contest of federal drug charges, or lost their license for having sex with patients and videotaping it, and the videotape got in the hands of the Georgia State Psychology Board. So there's a number of these individuals who were the peer review in the peer review process have gone to other professions. They've lost their license. They've had significant legal trouble. And this is a very, this is another major impact that we're going to have on the legal system, because peer review is the major gateway to admission under Daubert and Kumho. But what we have demonstrated is that peer review can be fatally flawed if the peers that are reviewing are incompetent or unethical or even, dare we say, irrational. Then the peer review process can fail. And so looking at the integrity of the peer review process itself is going to be another step, I predict. You're going to see this in the next decision from Justice Breyer, hopefully, that's going to be another step in the legal process. You can't just accept peer-reviewed research. You're going to have to look at the integrity of the peer review. We've had federal criminal prosecutions of therapists for fraud. If you remember, if you've been I started giving talks in 93, 94 saying that the feds were going to prosecute people. They should prosecute people. Well, it happened. That case did not complete because they didn't have enough jurors to finish the case. And, of course, the media tried to spin it that the prosecution would have lost that case, but that's ludicrous. Nobody knows what would have happened. And the fact that the prosecution was brought... So the other change that's taking place in the legal system as a result of this kind of case is what I call science-intensive litigation. Again, this notion that the Lone Ranger lawyer model is not going to cut it in complex scientific litigation. You must have a team. The standard rule that we like to uphold is that there should never, ever be an instance where the only expert witness, the only expert, the only MD or PhD in the room is the opposing expert. This is a disaster. Don't let this happen. And unfortunately, this happens all too often and with dramatically bad results. We're starting to bring Frey-Daubert rulings in family law. I'm working on a case in New York, which is in the New York Times almost every month. It's a family law case. We're going to have a Frey-Daubert hearing. Can you imagine that? I called experts all over the country. We've never had one of those in family law, even though bogus mental health testimony is rampant in family law. Okay, let's talk about, almost out of time here, let's talk about some of the predictions that we all made in 94, 95 that have come true. One, we were told early on that lawsuits against therapists for negligent psychotherapy were impossible. And that was true until Elizabeth Carlson started her lawsuit. And until the verdicts in Hammond and Carlson convinced the legal community that these cases were not only possible, but they were financially viable. Two, that informed consent will increasingly be viewed as an essential part of mental health practice. Now, we have a law in Indiana passed unanimously enforcing that. The HMOs are all enforcing this based on informed consent. They have to have reasons to get rid of bad therapy that's expensive and ineffective, and they're doing it based on informed consent rules. If you can't tell the patient the risks and benefits, if you don't have research to do that, you can't give informed consent. Therefore, we don't have to pay for it. Therefore, these therapists are out of money and they're out of work. Mental health professionals and the public will increasingly realize that patients have a right to receive treatments that have been demonstrated by credible scientific means to be safe and effective. Again, the system is enforcing that. Some insurance companies will refuse to insure recovered memory therapists. My policy that I just signed recently as a psychologist says that we don't insure anybody who is convicted of felonies, has sex with patients, or attempts to recover repressed memories of sexual abuse. So yes, we are having an impact in many different ways on the system. I'm just taking quotes from some speeches I had back in 94, 95. The American legal system will begin to restrict junk science testimony by mental health professionals. Boy, has that happened. We've taken a number of depositions of famous so-called experts, and it's funny, after those depositions get out and are public, they seem to have a lot of trouble testifying. And that process is going to continue. The pressure of litigation and the media will force the professional associations to take action against the worst RMT offenders. That just came true last night with that letter that we saw. Sigmund Freud, which is the way I always refer to him, Sigmund Freud's reputation will suffer as the enormity of his errors become well known, and your movement has certainly done that. How many people knew when you started this that Sigmund Freud cooked his data, lied to his medical school colleagues, slept with his patients, etc., etc.? I mean, this is information that would have remained buried in the vaults for a long time. The pressure of media and litigation will force licensing boards to revoke the licenses of the worst RMT offenders, recovered memory therapy offenders. Boy, has that happened in state after state after state after state. Again, considered impossible 10 years ago that someone would lose their license for telling people improper things, for bad talking, for transmitting false information to patients. Never happened before this movement. That criminal prosecutions based upon repressed memories recovered by therapy patients will be stopped. Now, I don't know if Mr. Quattrocci is here still. You hear Jack? Hello, Jack. This brave man, because he was willing to fight on, won a battle that has, as far as I know, stopped prosecutions based on repressed memories throughout the United States. We won the... Thanks to Dr. Loftus and Dr. Afshi and Dr. McHugh and Dr. Grove, who participated in that trial. That is, to this day, as far as I know, the most detailed, long-lasting, hard-fought Frey-Daubert hearing in history in any subject related to social science, and we won it very convincingly, didn't we, Jack? Once again, showing the power of science-intensive litigation. You know, we had three full-time prosecutors in the courtroom at all times in that month of hearings, full month of hearings. And that therapists who implant false memories and then bill federal insurance programs for treating the very symptoms the therapist caused will be prosecuted for healthcare fraud. And that has also come true. I'm running over time, but let me just talk about a couple of predictions for the future. Hospitals, HMOs, and major clinics will continue to avoid recovered memory therapy like the plague. Small clinics and radical, politicized, and mentally ill therapists will continue to practice some version of RMT and other bizarre pseudo-treatments, whether they be rapid eye movement or whatever. But there's no institutionalization of this treatment. Your movement and the lawsuits stop that. You don't go to medical school textbooks and see chapters on how to do this. Bogus pseudo-research will continue to be generated by purveyors of this nonsense, but it will be increasingly ignored by mainstream psychiatry and psychology, mostly because the research is so fatally flawed. I took the deposition of a major proponent of this research this month, and when I explained to him what evidence he really had that these memories had been corroborated, we got into a discussion about his data and where the data were, and he's destroyed it all. He admitted to me under oath that he's destroyed every scrap of so-called data that so-called corroborated the so-called memories, and no one other than him has ever seen any of these data. It's going to be released soon publicly. Everything in good time. The law will continue to evolve. We're going to see the end of the science illiterate judges and lawyers, which has been a problem for decades now. And we're going to see the end of the Lone Ranger attorney. You're going to see increasing pressure and legal malpractice suits against lawyers who try to do cases like this without having experts work with them. There is good and bad in all things. We are participating in the great war between good and evil. That is always the case. This war will always go on. And it may be in criminal law sometimes, and it may be in the mental health system sometimes. But the battle against false information, false ideas, pernicious evil notions will always be with us. I'm grateful to know the fine people of this particular organization. As I've said before, I think, Pam, and the work that you've done here, this is a model for how social problems can be fixed, not by government organizations, but by private individuals who act responsibly and professionally to solve complex problems. I want you to know how many people there are out there that are grateful. Everywhere I go and give talks, people will come up. They're very grateful for all that you have done to solve this problem. Due to the efforts of scientists, legal professionals, expert witnesses, devoted families, journalists, brave former patients, and others, the mental health system and now the legal system is truly being reformed. This process will continue. It is my hope and prayer that we may do our duty to guard and defend the truth against the evil and pernicious influence of false ideas, false beliefs, and false memories. Keep up the fight. Thank you.